Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure.
Exciting is as exciting does, I say.
Well, no, it's exciting, let me tell you. I mean...
Well, then that's what it does, but...
No, it's absolutely exciting to me.
It's very relative. I think excitement is...
No, you're my relative, so...
You're my relative.
Well...
Relatively speaking,
yeah.
Anyway.
Well, relativity. I find it exciting, the idea of approaching a foam ball and knowing that we have 2 hours to screw up.
Oh, yes.
And not knowing, generally speaking, exactly what I'm going to say for the next 2 hours. And the potential for failure here is always high, which makes it exciting. See, that's what excitement is all about, is the potential for failure. Anyway, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and we need to do a little bit of a disclosure here. The Personal Wealth Coach is not just a radio show. Wait, there's more. Have your credit card. No, that's wrong script. Let me go through a different script here. I got to find the different script.
There we go.
Okay. Yeah, here we go. Okay, The Personal Wealth Coach is also an investment advisory firm and wealth management firm registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission, located in Salado, Texas.
You didn't even read that. That was pretty good. You just...
How do you know I didn't read that?
Did you have it written on the inside of your eyelid?
Exactly.
All right. Well done.
Right there. It's just beneath. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law.
Memorize the close cover before striking.
Yes. But, you know, that's kind of old. A lot of people say, what? Where did you... What does that mean? You know? The number of people who have never seen a matchbook.
Well, close cover before striking. That's the thing they write on the side of lighters now, right?
I don't think so. No. I think they do write it on the on sticks. You're supposed to close the cover before striking someone with a stick.
Ah, all right. Yeah. Well, drumsticks, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess so. At any rate, you are listening to The Personal Wealth Coach, and we are, as I said, professionally during the week when we are a little more serious than we are on Saturday mornings.
Don't speak for yourself.
I am speaking for myself.
Well, you said we. I'm just saying maybe I'm a little bit less serious.
No. This is a
more
silly, this is a judgment. I observe you. And so we're actually what happens is after a full week of our
seriousness
of doing what we do in the dismal science, we're a little punchy by Saturday mornings, so we come
on here, have a little fun.
We come on this radio program and try not to be excessively serious. But anyway, what we do is investment stuff and economic stuff for people, and manage, you know, like stuff.
Stuff, that's
money.
The technical term for what we do.
Investments. Anyway, and that's what we do. And so if you have any questions about things relating to that, I love that, things relating to that.
Well, that depends on what the definition of the word is.
Is. Yeah, but we're still working on that issue. The President of the United States was uncertain as to the definition of the word is.
Well, he said his response would be dependent on the definition. I'm not sure that he was saying that he was uncertain to what it was.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a little...
Your definition of what the word is.
Yeah, what's your definition? I know,
you know
what
it's
mine
funny.
Is, but
eight years. 8 years as President of the United States. Did really... Over the time, during the time he was president, Bill Clinton saw some truly, really impressive things happen, including
right.
the deficit disappear,
NAFTA
the economy
was signed
do very
in,
well,
yeah, NAFTA
all kinds
signed
of things.
Law.
And yet, the principal thing we remember about him is
Monica Lewinsky. That's correct. You know, we know what his actual long-lasting legacy was.
Legacy
was, and that is Monica Lewinsky, because that deficit sure came back fast when.
Well, you know, telephone numbers. We probably ought to tell you if you're going to call
that.
Us, and if you'd like to call us and ask us any questions or make comments or whatever, the telephone numbers, if you're in East Bell County, is 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400, anywhere else within the sounds of our voices.
We probably ought to tell you that this is the 29th of June.
Yes.
So if it's any other day and you call those numbers, you're just going to get an irritated person in here who says, this is a rerun.
Right. So. We also have these
things. Or they just won't answer the phone.
We have these available on our website, these podcasts available on our website. And if you are listening to the podcast and you call that number, it's unlikely, unless you're doing it on a Saturday between 10 till noon, that you will actually get us. And
well,
we will probably not be talking about what you're listening to.
That's kind of normal for me.
Yeah, well, that's, I'm not talking about what you're listening to anyway.
One of the things that is going on this year, there's a lot of stuff going on. Of course, we were missing. No, I was by myself last week. Is that what it was?
No, we had the soccer came
on
for us.
Oh, yeah, we were missing in action because of a soccer game. But it's been an interesting couple of weeks. But one of the things that this year is pretty fascinating to me that I find that many, 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 many people are just blissfully unaware of. You remember a couple of years ago, California was in a position where all they had to do is keep on doing exactly what they were doing and they would be Greece.
Right.
As in B-R-O-Q-U-E, broke.
Broke. All right. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
That's right.
Right.
And this year, California is running a very nice budgetary surplus, which just irritates the fire out of most of the conservatives I talk to, because it's Jerry Brown, governor of California,
They still have a long ways to catch up to pay back the debt that they already have.
But the point is, we could
puff up our chests here in Texas and say, what debt?
Yes.
What debt?
Well, we actually have some. We're just very good at hiding it.
Yes.
We have the pensions, the state-funded pensions. Now, this is not – I want to accept the Texas teacher retirement system is nice and healthy, but the state-funded pension system in the state of Texas is got some problems.
Yeah.
But we'll see how well that works. So that's correctable, perhaps. But anyway, the point that they wanted to make here is they're running a nice surplus. And this is, you know, one of the things that is kind of a shocker for most people. And I got to find it here. The debt in our country is getting very healthy. Now, that sounds a little strange, but I want you to listen.
What are you talking about here? Healthy debt? What? Wait.
Let's start with consumer debt, okay?
Okay.
Consumer,
this is credit cards, this is
everything.
Loans for cars and
whole thing.
No, okay, good.
Cars, houses, mortgages.
This is for people that consume things.
The whole enchilada. Okay?
People that are consumers. Yes, all of us.
This is according to Morningstar. Consumer debt as a percentage of income has fallen from 140% in 2008. The average
140% of what?
Family.
Of
140%
income.
Of income.
Right.
Consumer debt as a percentage of income back in 2008 was 140%.
That doesn't sound real healthy.
No, well, it's 112 now.
That is much more healthy. And when you consider that that includes mortgages,
Now this
is within the bounds of reason.
Let me tell you what that amounts to in dollars. Between 2008 and 2000, at this point in 2013, actually it's about 3 months ago because there's a lag in this, the consumers in the United States have paid down, and I don't mean by bankruptcy.
Because that's in there too, but this is not what we're talking about.
About $1 trillion in debt.
Oh, that was me. It was not me.
We wonder why the economy is not growing as fast as a lot of people would like to see it do.
Paying back debt does not lead to growth anywhere in the economy.
Right.
I mean,
it's
very
healthy.
It's
money that's not spent.
It will lead to growth later when we don't have huge interest payments to pay every month.
Over the last several years, 9, 10, 11, 12, 5 years. No, yeah, about 4.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
The consumers in the United States have paid back, paid down, eliminated through paying off, any way you want to put it, about $1 trillion, which, by the way, leads to higher unemployment because they're not spending the money, they're rather paying it back.
Mm-hmm.
It leads to slower economic growth. It leads to deflation.
Mm-hmm.
And whoa, lo and behold, $1 trillion impact on the economy. This is just from the consumers. Now, this is before we get into the
corporate area,
companies who do various things.
Now, let me emphasize something here. What I just said is that paying down debt does not lead immediately to any kind of growth. If you have $100 in your pocket and you've got $200 in credit card debt and you have a nice new iPod you want to buy. Not that mm-hmm. they make really iPods that are separate. I mean, there's only one real.
They still make iPods?
They've got the iPods that aren't part of the phone. Anyway, this is an imaginary widget iPod, a new one.
iPod?
iPod, yes. We'll change it so that there's no copyright involved. It's an iPod.
Okay. Yes.
And you decide, instead of buying that iPod widget thing, you're going to pay back your credit card. Bank. It takes profit away from the
right.
bank, and that's where part of money is being created. So this is part of the reason why we're not seeing inflation, because people are paying back their debt before it has time to accrue a whole bunch of interest charges.
Right.
That's one of those interesting factoids, and people that come to me throughout the week, they talk about fear of inflation. That's still a really major point. People bring that up regularly. When I ask them what they're doing with the debts that they had a few years ago, almost unanimously they're saying, well, I don't have those anymore. I paid those off.
Well, there's more good news.
Yeah, and that's where money creation comes in, is the interest charges on debt, mm-hmm. which means if you've been paying off your debt, you are not contributing to inflation. You're actually doing the opposite, which is in some ways good and
yeah. well,
depends on who you ask.
Even the federal government has got in on this game.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people... Yeah. are going to have a lot of trouble believing this, but again, this is Morningstar, and I went and looked up the numbers just to make sure the people in Morningstar were not smoking illegal or controlled substances.
Illicit activities going on of some kind.
The federal government's annual deficit has been cut back by more than half, and within a year, according to the Congressional Budget Office, it should be back at pre-recession levels, the deficit.
Mm-hmm.
The deficit calculated as a percentage of GDP, and again, this is from Morningstar, is currently projected to fall back to 2% by 2015.
That's a very healthy level, because we're projected to grow this year at higher than 2%.
Mm-hmm. And in this year alone, the deficit is right now on track to be 4% of GDP, which isn't ideal. But once we get back to 2%, now let's throw this in. If the deficit is growing at 2%,
and our country,
which is if we don't do anything, if we just leave everything alone,
right?
Then the deficit as a percentage of gross domestic product by 2015 will shrink to 2%. Now, over the last year, the last 12 months,
mm-hmm.
and I realize that before I give you the number I'm about to give you here. I'm talking about the GDP growth, gross domestic product growth in the United States. I realize that the first quarter growth was shaved back to 1.8%. There's a lot of good reasons for that,
yeah.
and there's a lot of good reasons to indicate that that was a very temporary slowdown.
Right.
But here's the point. Year over year, the gross domestic product of the United States has grown at least 3.3%, and the probabilities are it will be revised upward to 3.4%. Now,
what that means is just to remind everybody, that's slow growth. That's mm-hmm. not fast growth. That's slow growth. People have been talking about slow growth in the economy. If we have slow growth in the economy and our deficit is at 2% of GDP,
we eventually pay off our debts. We are going to see a shrinking debt load going forward, which, again, as I have explained this to individuals who come into our office, they have a lot of trouble believing what I just said. In other words, as it stands today, and you're going to think this is crazy, folks.
Oh, everything you say is crazy, folks.
But as it stands today, if we vigorously do nothing, which Congress has seemed to develop a capacity for
They have
doing.
Skills in that area.
Very,
very – the skills that they have are they both sides of the aisle are working just as hard as they can to pull
prevent
in the opposite direction.
From happening, yeah.
It's like a tug of war match where the both sides are equally powerful, and so nothing is happening.
Then basically, our system is healthy and going to get a lot better.
So this is a case where polarization is doing the same thing as compromise.
I got to work on that one.
if you're now, pulling against each other as hard as you can and you're getting nowhere, or the other side, you're standing around saying, let's do nothing together, it's
actually
the same result.
There's another little, I'm throwing these little factoids out here,
yes,
but I found them absolutely astonishing. By the way, you can find them if you're a subscriber to Morningstar, and I may have it available for everybody, but it's their economic outlook that they publish at the end of each quarter. It's fascinating. Auto sales and productions in the United States are now running at over 90% of pre-recession levels. Okay,
now, and they're going to pick up to way above pre-recession levels because during the recession we didn't buy cars.
Right,
we got to catch up and replace.
We're still
these.
Not caught up with the necessary replacement rate. So it's going. But this is even better. The employment numbers by the auto industry are running at 70% of pre-recession levels, while production is at 90%. And this is the other side of this. They could come up to 120% of pre-recession production and not hire anybody.
That's productivity gain.
Huge productivity gain.
And that's not good news if you were in the auto industry as a manufacturer before the recession. It is really good news for our economy long term, though.
Well, since over the last 3 years, manufacturing-based industrial production is up 20%, while employment is up 5% in that area.
This is due directly to productivity growth. Mm-hmm. And long term, that is incredibly good for the economy. Short term, it's really, really bad for the individual involved there.
Actually, there's a very fascinating thing going on here that's not happened in previous recoveries. After a recession, as demand picks up again, historically, for the last 50 years or so, 40 or 50 years, the manufacturing sector in the United States has decreased jobs, not increased.
So we are actually hiring back, which is unusual.
Right, and this is the point. The manufacturing is staying in the United States. We are not exporting net in the United States as we recover and we increase, as companies increase their output, they're increasing the output locally in the United States rather than exporting the output overseas.
This is really important
to understand.
When you say exporting the output, that's really confusing. What he's saying is we're not exporting jobs anymore.
Yeah, well, not just jobs.
Manufacturing. It's being done here.
But it's not the actual, let's talk about widgets for a second. You can do it with automobiles, too.
Can we call it an iPond?
You're right. Whatever is being manufactured. Now, that sector probably wouldn't apply.
No, that doesn't apply there. No.
But the actual heavy manufacturing sectors, the manufacturing of things like automobiles in the United States, as we are picking back up on the manufacturing, we are not importing more automobile parts. We're actually making more automobiles here.
And exporting them.
Right, and exports, our exports are rising as a result. And the reason we're able to do that, able to compete with relatively low-cost labor overseas is through automation, combination of two things. What was the end that you were going to throw in?
I'll wait till you throw in this one, and I'll put another end on it if it's needed.
And the cost of fuel.
And there's one more.
What's that?
Because the Federal Reserve still has us on QE3, that drip going. Our currency is not strong against other currencies. If that wasn't going on, our currency would be going through the stratosphere. Yeah, people go, "Ah, weak currency, that's a horrible thing." No, it means that overseas our products are cheap compared to others.
Relatively speaking.
Relatively speaking, compared to the euro, compared to even when you go into the Asian world.
Which is really
world.
Weird because you look at the economy of Europe, economy of China, the economy of Japan. You go around the world looking at the other major economies in the world, and frankly, there's a lot of numbers and a lot of ways to look at them, and they're all saying precisely, all of the numbers are revealing precisely the same characteristics. The United States economy is so much more healthy than any other economy in the world, any other major economy. Now, there's certain
smaller
emerging
economies.
Markets economies that are doing very, very well, but... when you look at our major other economies, which is basically, by the way, Europe and China. Japan. Europe, China, and Japan. We are so much more, and I'm going to get into more of that in a little bit. We have, well, the caller.
The caller left.
Okay, the caller gave up on us. I was going to go to the caller.
I would have given up on us, too. I gave up to on us a few minutes ago, actually. I haven't been paying attention.
And the other thing, and I'm just burying at the beginning of the show.
Factoids coming, flowing out.
But it's just, as I was reading through this, I realized, we've had short term in the second quarter, we had some bumpiness because people are terrified of the Wizard of Oz, Ben Bernanke. They think that he's going to blow something up. But
Can I pause you there just a second? One of the things, we were joking about this on the way into the studio because the Temple Daily Telegram has a front page headline. And it says... What does it say? Summer is hot or something like that. The summer heat is here.
Like it doesn't normally arrive in July?
And we joked about the fact that, you know, they have a picture of a melted crayon on a piece of asphalt with, you know, like it's on the road and it's melted. And we joked about the fact that that's probably because they're on vacation and they just run the same story every year. They just replace the headline with a few different. They may even change that. They maybe change the it's a fried egg on the asphalt instead of a melted crayon, and they're like, okay, we're going on vacation. Who's doing the headline? Oh, just one last year's.
I think the big picture on the front of the Temple paper today is it shows a man who is weightlifting outside, and he is sweating.
So
that's the big deal is he's sweating.
So I am using that as a reference point because this week. Last week and the week before and the week before, the headline in the financial worlds was Finance Week Ahead, focus on the Fed. They don't have to write anything new. They're just saying everybody's waiting for the Fed to talk. Well, he just spoke about 5 minutes ago. Yes, but we're waiting for him to talk. They're going to talk. Mm-hmm. They're going to say something, and then the market's going to do something, and then we're going to listen for him again.
I have another factoid, and then we're going to break for commercials. This is the Personal Wealth Coach, by the way.
Yes.
Chairman Bernanke of the Federal Reserve was making a speech recently.
And everybody was listening.
At a press conference.
Uh-huh.
And he mentioned that most of the major U.S. banks, now I'm going to use a geeky word here and I'll come back and explain it, could already meet the strict Basel III capital standards. Now,
that's some kind of a herb that you put in a stew.
Right, obviously.
I've got some basil plants growing outside.
This was what the international community of finance guys got together and
make pesto out of that stuff, right?
But they set a very, very, very high standard called, and they set this as Basel III, and they said within 5 years the goal of the banks should be to meet that standard. They gave them 5 years to get there, and this is very recent that they did this. There might be a bank someplace in Europe that might meet that standard, but I don't think so.
No.
None of them have claimed it. Certainly the banks in China don't even come close to meeting that standard. The banks in Japan don't come close to meeting that standard. It is, and it was, while it all was a good thing, immediately the various central banking authorities around the world said, now don't hold us to that because we might not be able to make it, except... Folks, in the United States, the majority of major banks already meet that standard. Some of them are way past that standard. And even though we can be unhappy about debt and we can be unhappy about student loans, and we can be unhappy. We can choose anything we want to be unhappy about. The point I wanted to make is, across the board, financially, the United States is not only in, first off, I will say, in fair condition, but getting better quickly. When we compare the United States financial system to the rest of the major developed economies, they're just, it's really hard to compare them because our system is so relatively healthy compared with the rest of the world that it's sort of mind-boggling. And we've gotten that way in a relatively short period of time. I mean, in 2009, everybody was on the rocks.
Yeah.
And here we are, 3.5 years later.
Doing great. Doing a lot better. I mean, we're not as good as we were, but we're doing a lot better than anybody else.
And the United States, basically, the financial fundamentals of the United States economy are extremely healthy at this point.
And when we look at the banking industry, they're actually far more healthy than they were at the peak.
Right.
That's something, and this is something I wanted. We talk about the meaning of words often, and you used a word there. I made fun of it. You make pesto. Basil has two old-fashioned meanings. The Greek meaning is king, but the Latin term, the Latin meaning of it, has meant normal, the high standard of normalcy. If you are a diabetic, when you are taking insulin at a normal rate from a pump, it's called your basal rate. That's the normal rate. You don't have to take anything extra for that. It's the flat or normal rate.
Well, in this case, though, it's named after a town in Switzerland.
Right. Well, what I'm coming at here is that our standard is the standard of excellence. Basal means standard, but it also means king. So we have set a standard of something that the rest of the world can't meet, we're requiring all of our banks to meet. Nobody else in the rest of the world can even meet it with one bank.
Did you say west of the world?
Yeah, the west of the world.
That's what I thought you said.
Yeah, so what all I'm saying there is the meaning of the word is very specific. It's also named after a town, but it's a really good comparison to say there's not really a bank in Europe. Besides in Switzerland, there's some banks in Switzerland that could do
There are some banks in Switzerland?
Oh, I've heard somewhere there's some chocolate, maybe, some cheese, some cuckoo clocks.
When I said Europe, I meant the Eurozone
yes.
and the European Union, for that matter, which neither one of which Switzerland is part of.
No, they are part of the continent, though. There is a continent there.
There are some people who don't think so, including the people in Switzerland who are above it.
Like, nope, not part of that bunch over there.
Well, we need to do some commercials, but I've actually got good news, which is absurd.
Yes. You're going to make everybody change the channel if you keep talking about good things.
But I am just in my research, having not had to do the research last week, I had 2 weeks of data to look at. I was frankly just, I was very surprised. And yet, because I hear the rhetoric that everything is bad and getting worse, and yet when I was looking at the
all that bad news is good news.
The solid economists who are not trying to sell something,
because bad news sells, which is why I'm saying if you keep talking about good news, people are going to change the channel.
Yes, they will.
What are they listening to this?
I don't know. I mean,
these guys are talking about good stuff. I want to hear about crashing airplanes and.
Well, the market was down.
That's true. We could talk about that. Gold is down. Market is down. And
it's up for the year, and it's up for
Before we hit commercials, I'm going to give some dire prognostications for the week ahead.
Good. Give some dire. It's going to be hot.
It is going to be hot, but I've even got more dire prognostications.
Okay, yes.
We've got two big government surveys on jobs coming out on the same day on a week where we have a half-day open market and a full-day closed market.
You don't think they're going to look good?
I don't care if that looks good or bad. Everybody that is in a good mood is going to be on vacation next week. So everybody in a bad mood is going to be it's going to be a thinly traded week. The volatility is going to be through the roof.
And that is one of those things, by the way, that happens every year. We probably
4th of July week every year. We don't even have to say anything.
The first week in July traditionally is just goofy.
Yeah, we've got holidays, which means there's less days of trading, which means the skittish people tend to sell before there's a holiday because bad news might come out.
Short the market for Friday.
Right. Bad news might come out while we're unable to trade. So the skittish people are all, oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. And all the people that are bullish about the market are because they're bullish, they're like, I'm going to take some time off. I'm going to go on vacation. So there's very little trading. Anytime you have very little trading, it's generally on the downside, and it has a bigger impact on the market because there's less people out there buying anyway. So just be aware. There's my dire prognostication.
So you say there's less people buying anyway, so you're recommending a purchase of anyway?
Yes, anyway.com. No, that may not. No, actually, that may actually be a dot com. And I'm sure there is.
What's the signal? Is that A-N-Y?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, well,
IDK. IDK.
Okay,
I don't know.
Right. Whatever. Well, we'll be back on the other side of these commercials, with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers, if you would like to give us a call in here, are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And presuming that I can figure out how to work all this stuff, we'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And no, we are not the ones who screwed up and ran that commercial twice.
Yeah, that's the computer did that. We just looked at it.
It's in the computer twice, and it's
somebody
there.
Was involved in putting it in there.
I guess. Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe the computer just grabs.
Maybe the whole issue is there was a little piece left off the end of that, and I don't want to knock this. Obviously, we don't do software piracy, and I certainly recommend that you not do software piracy, and I think it's a really bad idea.
I might do it if I had a really cool ship and an eye patch. We could go out, yarr! probably not, though. I think the piracy today looks more like a Somalian than it does like the old-fashioned.
Yeah, you're riding around a little bitty boat.
Big, bristly.
In the big of the ocean, yeah. Chasing down a super tanker, you know?
That's not quite the same thing as, yarr, me mateys. Yeah, it's not Treasure Island anymore.
But I don't know. I found that commercial to be one of the more interesting commercials, and the fact that they played it twice, like back to back.
Well, I have some numbers for some things that you were talking about last hour, and you're going to, well, this guy is really he's astute here in his thinking. U.S. vehicle sales based on a 3-month average going back to 19.
Canvas or nylon?
Vehicles?
Sales.
Oh, probably canvas sailing.
It's a canvassing.
No, we were talking about piracy, so you got to have sales for piracy. Yeah.
Okay, we're just finding out what kind of sales you're talking about. Okay.
We're talking about U.S. vehicle sales going all the way back to 1965.
Right.
And we've got this.
Those are really old sales.
Yes, they're falling apart at this point. I've got this chart overlaid recessions, or the person that put it together for me, overlaid recessions on the chart. Basically, what we're seeing here is that over time, the demand for vehicles has risen, obviously, since 1965. In 1965, most people had one car for a household. That was normal. In 1970s, people started getting maybe one more car for the household. Now it's more two or three if you've got kids, maybe four if you've got more kids. Okay, so during the recession, we went from the average demand for vehicles going from about 1998 all the way up to about 2008. The average demand for replacement vehicles was about 16,500,000
per year.
Per year.
Okay.
Okay. During the recession.
That's a lot of vehicles.
Yeah, during the recession.
Mm-hmm.
We went from 16,500,000 on average to 7 to 8 million, up and down right there. So
we'll just say
7.5 million replaced for about 2 years. The following 3 years, we only replaced about 12 million per year. Well,
that means we're short about 20 million there.
Well, we're short more than that if you think of the whole 5-year period. We're short about 2 years full replacement at $16 million.
But the reason I say that about $20 million is because people's habits change. Now, once we get feeling really, really good about ourselves, we'll do this again.
Right.
But people are proud of the fact at this point, I'm driving a car with 180,000 miles on it.
I'm still driving it, and it's wonderful, and the wheels just fell off, but I can push it up the hill. It's
right,
fine.
Right.
And that's not true in every case. Most people that are saying 180,000 miles are probably driving a Japanese-built car.
German.
A German-built car as well.
Your sister. One of your sisters is driving a 180,000-mile car.
In April, where we're at the 14.88, year over year, 14.88 million. So we're still way below that 16, 17 million average, but we're almost back up to a normal replacement year if everything being equal.
90%,
but we still have all of that extra stuff to rebuild back in there. So people are saying automobile sales are coming back. This is great. This is wonderful. The issue is that while it is great and wonderful, we still have, even if we replace less than we would have before the recession, but that was a long period of time that we were right at that flat level. We still have a lot of vehicles, even if we've changed our habits, that need to be purchased. And the same is true with large appliances
and washing machines and
stuff. Yes, large appliances. That is, they used to say TVs were part of that, but TVs have been replaced because the prices have been dropping drastically through
TV? What's a TV?
Television, a flat panel television.
Oh, you're talking about a flat panel HD monitor.
Right, whatever those things are. Yeah, the things that used to weigh about 18 tons and took
They're coming back to 18 tons quickly.
They're just because they take up the whole room's wall now, where before it was 18 tons and it had a screen that was about 14 inches across. Now that has 100 inches across, and it takes two people to carry it, not eight. It's still getting heavier, but...
Right.
If you remember those big pieces of wooden furniture that had a TV in them, it was the Curtis Mathis things. Carry those. The cats have nothing to sit on anymore.
They do.
They balance up on top.
No. The cats have something to sit on.
What are they saying?
What do they call those little automated vacuum cleaners?
Oh, yeah, the Roombas.
Roombas, yes.
They just sit on those and one.
Apparently... For those of you who are unaware of this, it's all over YouTube, but apparently everybody, I've talked to a couple of people, actually have these things, these little automatic vacuum cleaners
cats
that
like
come out during the day when you're not there, and they wander around your floor vacuuming up the floor.
Not particularly well, but it's better than nothing.
But it, you know.
It's a really expensive form of...
Entertainment.
Yes, and the cats love them.
And the thing is, apparently cats think they are the greatest thing in the world, and if you have two cats, they will fight over the right...
To sit on the thing
to
as
sit
it moves
on
around.
The thing as it moves around the floor. I have no doubt that somebody is going to do a doctoral dissertation on why cats like to sit on Roombas.
I think it's the same reason why children like big wheels. Children like tricycles. They want to be able to move around. They, especially at young ages, don't have a whole lot of control over which direction they're going, but they are going somewhere, and they like it.
By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach, and the telephone number is in here, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
I got enough. That's the thing about taking a week off involuntarily.
Yeah, we've got tons of stuff to talk about.
This is going to be one that everybody that I have mentioned it to, well, not everybody, almost everybody I've mentioned it to immediately objects and says it ain't true. And I have researched the heck out of the numbers and checked it every way I know
why
how to check
there it. Heck, why was there heck in the numbers?
You've got to get
that stuff out of there.
Healthcare costs in the United States. Now, you're going to think I am out of my mind.
We should just make that part of what we say at the beginning of the hour. It's like, we're a registered SEC registered investment advisory firm.
And you're going to think
we're out of our mind.
Yes. Well, that actually works very well because investing is counterintuitive.
It is.
So whatever your intuition is on this, it's going to be the opposite.
The opposite, yes.
This is what is astonishing. Medical care inflation. One year right now is 0.
That's not inflation at all.
And
I once inflated my floaty to 0, and it didn't work at all.
The point is
that
medical care costs, the actual cost of the care, that's the everything that has that's paid for at the hospital, your medications, the whole thing, is the same price today overall in the economy as it was a year ago. Now, I'm going to say right up front the same thing that I have heard a lot of people immediately. Well, then why is my cost of health care gone up? Why is my this or whatever gone up?
Right. Because you're older now than you used to be.
Well, that's true. There's a couple of reasons.
Everybody is, though. That's
first off,
easy answer.
Across the board, across the nation, deductibles have risen, which means that the consumer is paying for more of that cost. So from the consumer's point of view,
healthcare costs went up.
Their cost, but this is why, this is at least the economists are saying, this is why healthcare costs flattened out, is because the people who are receiving them are now shopping around to find lower costs. They're actually participating in the market. The market-based system is actually
money.
Working. The other thing.
Yeah, this is important. Let me hit that part right there. I think you just said something kind of in passing that is vitally important to the whole insurance market world. Until the actual consumer has some part in the pain of paying for the medical costs,
they're going to go up.
They're going to go up because you're just going to go to whoever is out there. It doesn't matter because the insurance is paying for it. As soon as your cost goes up, your individual cost goes up differently if you go to one doctor than another, you suddenly start shopping around. And I don't mean the cost going up on insurance premiums. I mean actually at the doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got to pay $100 to see a doctor and one is better than another, you're probably going to go see the better doctor for that $100.
Now, you just got through looking at our health insurance. Did you?
Yes.
Did it go up?
Very
year?
Slightly.
Okay.
Now, it's very slightly up.
But there have been people, employers and others, who have said, hey, my health insurance cost went up this last year. So I did some research on that. That's unusual. It's common here. So I tried to figure out why it's common here in Central Texas. And apparently around the rest of the country, they're seeing the same things we saw in our health insurance issue. There's just not a lot of variance in it. Turns out that, yes, health insurance premiums in Texas have gone up, and they went up because, and a lot of people are not going to like this, the government's rejection of the federal funding to set up, to help pay for and basically run the whole show to insure uninsured people under Obamacare resulted in the insurance companies looking at Texas and saying, uh-oh, healthcare costs are going to go up in Texas because we're still going to have to pay for uninsured people in the hospitals, and the people who have insurance are going to wind up paying for that.
Right.
Therefore, they anticipated that, and they allowed them.
Yeah.
Have raised their healthcare charges.
Right.
Now,
because the federal law here is very explicit. The federal law says that people with no insurance are supposed to be covered with some kind of insurance, or and if they show right. up and the states are supposed to do things, and in this case the state is saying, well, we're not going to increase
right.
our
we're not going to work
Medicaid
with this. Right.
costs, so no. Well, the federal law still requires treatment. It still requires
right.
a whole bunch of things. So these people are still going to come in, which means the cost of our insurance is going
yeah.
to go up, and it's not going to be based on that tax fines,
right.
the penalties that the law put in place, because that money comes back to the state in Medicaid.
The point is that in the states where they're anticipating high compliance, and people are actually going to get the insurance because the state is participating, they've received the money, and they are getting out there vigorously ensuring that people get insurance. Ensuring that people get insurance? That's weird.
Yes, ensuring that people are insured.
Apparently, they anticipate the health care cost per insured person to go down.
Yeah.
And so they're lowering premiums, but in states where the states are not complying, they anticipate that the healthcare costs will go up.
Well, what we're going to see here is a grand experiment.
Yeah.
We're going to be able to see which side of this is going to work more, and it's really hard for us to determine, and we can make some basic assumptions, but until it's done, until a year's gone by, we won't know the impact.
Well,
we have some more commercials to play.
We do, and we're going to play the more commercials. There's actually only relatively few. I wanted to say one thing. Scott & White, I was trying to figure out why Scott & White didn't go up in their charges. And the answer is that we have very, very relatively few uninsured people.
Yeah.
In Central Texas.
In Bell County and in Williamson County, the uninsured rate is very low. If you get down to Travis County, however, the uninsured rate is very high.
I wonder. That's interesting. I mean, does that mean Democrats tend to have high uninsured rates? Anyway. No, it just means we have a lot of government employees.
I think causation is not necessary. Correlation and vice versa.
And we got to do a couple of commercials. We'll be back on the other side with more of the Personal Wealth Coach. And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. Got about 3 minutes left in this first hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. This the 29th day of June, year of our Lord, 2013. Ba-ba-ba-bum.
Yes. Or current
dramatic.
Era. Current era, 2013.
Current era stuff.
No, you're right. This is last
anno
year's
Domini.
Era.
Domini.
Last year's, Anno Domini.
Anno
yes.
Domini. It is the year of our Lord.
Oh, okay.
Forget this CE stuff. CE is continuing education.
Yes.
And if you had 2013 years of continuing education, you know what you'd be?
Old.
Dead.
Yes. You would not be very smart at that point.
You wouldn't?
I don't think so.
Okay. Anyway, and what we've been saying this hour is absolutely true.
So we say.
Well, the evidence is in, counselor. And despite the fact that our economy is the healthiest on the planet at this point, our debt is diminishing, our growth is accelerating. Everything seems to be working quite well. Two things are rather obvious. One, there's a lot of skittish, nittish folks out there who are going to be bopping around in the market. The bond market remains excessively high. The stock market remains low. And the Congressional Budget Office notes that the economy is operating more than 5% below its potential. That is the lowest since it has been measured. And it's only been measured since World War II. Well, we're coming up on about a minute left in this hour. We certainly would welcome you to give us a call next hour. We're going to be breaking, of course, for Fox News.
If you would like to contact us, however, off the air, we kind of manage portfolios for a living. So if you want to, I think so.
I've been doing all week is managing? I just thought it was playing with numbers.
It could be that, too.
Okay.
If you would like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting over the weekend locally at...
let's see. It's 947-1111. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, he remembered that.
Yeah.
Our toll-free 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can reach us by email at jake@tpwc.com or jeff@tpwc.com.
That's me. I'm Jeff. He's Jake.
You can also go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and our new webpage, thetpwc.com, and listen to our podcast.
They're different?
Until next hour, this has been the Personal Wealth Coach.
KTEM, AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood, the best talk in America. News Radio 1400 KTEM.